Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. William Shakespeare is considered the greatest English playwright. He's so great that many people these days are intimidated by even the thought of watching one of his plays and trying to understand the 16th century semantics. The Royal Shakespeare Company in England decided to do something about that and several years ago launched Stand Up for Shakespeare to change how the bard is taught in British schools. Now, through a unique collaboration with Ohio State University, the Royal Shakespeare Company is doing the same for Central Ohio teachers and students. Later on, we're going to meet one of the company's acting coaches who has been directing graduate theater students in a production of Shakespeare's Othello. We'll also meet the young actor playing the lead in that production and a Reynoldsburg school teacher who traveled to England to train with the Royal Shakespeare Company. Right now, we welcome to the show Jackie O'Hanlon. She's the education director of the Royal Shakespeare Company. Jackie has been working with OSU and Central Ohio teachers and students since 2009 when the collaboration began. Welcome to the show, Jackie.
Thank you very much. It's great to be on it.
We know the problem. High school students are forced to read Shakespeare's plays, and some of them are put off of the notion of Shakespeare for life because of that. What made you believe you could change the attitudes towards Shakespeare, especially among young people in that age group?
Really, it's through seeing the results of the work that we and other theatre companies do with young people across the United Kingdom. We traditionally, in our classrooms, treat Shakespeare like a novel. So the students traditionally sit down at their desks and open a Shakespeare play and read it like a book. And we think that's the surefire way of turning young people off Shakespeare for life. And that's what they used to tell us. They would say they think Shakespeare's boring and irrelevant because it's so hard to access those texts, to understand the language when you're just sitting down. And our actors here would run out of a room if that's how they had to create a performance. They couldn't do it if they were simply reading the plays. So we decided in 2008 to launch a manifesto called Stand Up for Shakespeare, as you've said, and it just said three very simple things need to happen to engage children and young people imaginatively in these plays and get them excited by them. And those three things are: they need to see Shakespeare live, start Shakespeare earlier at elementary school, and do Shakespeare on their feet. And what we mean by that is that students need to be up on their feet, moving and speaking the text, the words, feeling the language in their mouths, tasting the words, and making decisions as actors and directors do in order to fully understand the choices that the plays offer us in terms of interpretation. What I suppose concerns us is that, for example, there's the brilliant Baz Luhrmann film of Romeo and Juliet. But students who watch that increasingly begin to talk to us about the scene that happens by the fish tank. And there isn't a scene that happens by the fish tank. You know, there are words that Shakespeare has written. There's a play, and it's interpreted, and it's reinterpreted time and time and time and time again. And you can only really get that when you actively engage with the text like actors do and like directors do. So that's why we passionately believe that's the key way that students and children of all ages need to be engaging with the plays.
I guess I sort of think of Shakespeare like a language, maybe like a foreign language, and the idea is to teach it sooner rather than later.
Yeah, and that's true. I mean, certainly in the UK, there's a big movement to teach foreign languages earlier in primary schools, in elementary schools. And we know that some of our most successful work is with elementary school children who have absolutely no fear of Shakespeare. Nobody's told them it's difficult or hard or boring. And so they're so used to engaging with new and unusual language that it's second nature to them. And there's so many brilliant sessions that I've been involved in with young people where they have grappled with what a particular word or a line might mean with real gusto, because actually what children love doing is problem solving. So if you think about Shakespeare as this fantastic set of challenges and problems that you need to probe and find your way into, then that makes it a really exciting adventure for children as opposed to something that is impenetrable for them. Actually, children approach the plays in the same way that our actors do. There isn't a magic switch that gets turned on in the brains of an actor when they start working here. Mm-hmm. They find Shakespeare's text just as challenging, just as difficult as students do. And that's why we as a company have developed so many ways of working with the text and getting it up on its feet, getting actors and students actively engaging with it in order to cut through the barrier of, oh my gosh, when I look at those words on a page, I can't understand it, to the understanding that happens when you speak the words.
I want to remind folks that we're talking with Jackie O'Hanlon. She's the education director of the Royal Shakespeare Company. Jackie's been working with OSU and Central Ohio teachers and students since 2009 when the collaboration began. If you have a question or comment for Jackie, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. Jackie, how do you measure success? So for instance, give us some examples from British classrooms and how you've measured success there.
Well, there's lots of different ways that we measure success. Success for me mm-hmm. is that a child will leave one of a classroom on Shakespeare and they can't wait to get to the next one. And that's certainly what we hear repeated from schools, is that children will say to their teachers, you know, the teacher will say, okay, we've got Shakespeare today. And there will be a cheer about that, as opposed to a cry of, oh my gosh, not Shakespeare again. One of my favourite quotes is of a nine-year-old boy who was working on Hamlet with his teacher. And he said, my dad said Shakespeare was boring, but I'm going to tell him about Hamlet. It's got castles and ghosts and murders and stuff, and that's not boring. So that's success for me, where children are really excited by Shakespeare and inspired by it. And we have many stories of children going away from a Shakespeare classroom and picking up the complete works, taking Shakespeare plays out of the library and wanting to go and read them, because now they feel they have a right to, they have an interest in it, they understand there's a code that they can break with Shakespeare, and that becomes really exciting for them. So that's a very important measure of success for me. I want children to form a lifelong relationship with Shakespeare, with these plays, with theatre going. On a more attainment-based level, what we have a lot of evidence, an increasing amount of evidence of, not just in the UK, but also in the brilliant work that is being done by elementary and high school teachers in Columbus, is of attainment being changed. Students achieve more in their Shakespeare work and in literacy when they work with Shakespeare. I find that a very interesting statistic. For example, one of the school that we've been working with in the UK, their test scores on writing composition, two-thirds of the class moved up more levels, more of a level in 6 weeks of working on Shakespeare than their teacher would expect them to make in a whole year. So the progress they made after working on Shakespeare in their own creative writing was greater over a six-week period than the teacher expected over 12 months. That tells me that children exploring what we'd call a complex text, being exposed to complex forms of writing where really interesting word choices and sentence construction happens, influences their own writing abilities. We need to do more research on that, but I find it a very interesting interesting emerging evidence that's coming out of the schools we work with.
Complex, yes, but also Shakespeare is creeped into so much a part of our everyday lives we don't even know it.
Well, that's so true. I mean, we're doing a research project at the moment about where Shakespeare is taught in the world, because we kind of don't know. We think, oh well, yes, it's in the US and it's in America and it's in the UK, but we found out that Shakespeare is taught in Australia, Canada, South Africa, Brazil, Czech Republic, Denmark, Georgia, Germany, Russia, India, Libya, Namibia, Philippines, Poland, Spain, Sudan, Tanzania, Ukraine, and Vietnam.
So like the greatest playwright ever is more descriptive.
He's the most prolific playwright ever. I think what's really interesting is the world feels he belongs to them. Mm-hmm. So I wouldn't define Shakespeare as, you know, he's the British playwright. Mm-hmm. He feels as though he belongs to the world and lots of countries throughout the world. I mean, I know particularly in South Africa, the work we've done in South Africa, many South Africans believe Shakespeare is really belongs to them, because his writing speaks so much of their culture and their tradition, and they reinvent him continually. So I think that's he has a very unique place in world cultural traditions. I don't know of another player, I'm sure, you know, maybe your listeners do, but I don't know of another writer who has that kind of influence and impact on education systems and culture, the culture of countries throughout the world. It's pretty extraordinary.
So why Ohio State University in Central Ohio? How did the collaboration begin? And are we the first place outside of the UK where Stand Up for Shakespeare America has been tried?
You are, yes. Really, we started a conversation with OSU about 3 years ago, which was very much a conversation about the values of both of our organisations. At the time, the Ohio State University wanted to look much more internationally about the kinds of partnerships that they were creating, interesting artistic partnerships particularly. And we were very, very keen to find a university partner in the United States who matched our philosophy of how we wanted to work with children in the classroom. And I think there's a lot of academic snobbery about Shakespeare, so there's lots of fear, particularly around introducing Shakespeare in the elementary classroom. So we wanted a university partner who was excited by that idea and would go with us on a journey. And OSU were a brilliant fit in that way. And it's been a really wonderful collaboration over the past 2 years, working with different teachers on residential programs in Stratford, and we then go over and visit at OSU, and we work with around 20 to 25 teachers each year. So we've had 2 years so far of working with two cohorts of teachers, and they're right the way from what we call early years, right at the bottom of elementary school, right up to the top of high school. And there's a very, very, very strong body of practice emerging, and some fantastic talent in the teaching, the teachers in Ohio State that we've been working with, and also in the work they've been doing. And I think you'll hear about that in Reynoldsburg mm-hmm. School that you're talking to later. Very exciting work coming out of that school.
Jackie, tell us, what is the new approach to teaching Shakespeare? What's it based on?
It's based on what we do in rehearsals. So when we rehearse a play, we allow about 12 weeks for a rehearsal period, 8 to 12 weeks for a rehearsal period here at the RSC. And we play with the text, generally. There's a lot of playing with the plays. There is some sitting down. There's quite a lot of sitting down and analysing the text. But there is also a huge amount of getting up on your feet and playing with the language, the situations, the characters, discovering together the world of the play. There's a real sense of collaborative inquiry about what this play is about, what the world of the play is. Now, traditionally, in English classrooms in the UK, there isn't a sense of collaborative inquiry about the play. Instead, there's a very traditional approach of the students sit down and they annotate the text, and they are often told the meaning of the words, rather than it being an exploration of what might this word mean or this phrase mean, or why is this character saying it. So that the traditional approach to Shakespeare is about fixing meaning, whereas the theatre-based approach to teaching or to exploring Shakespeare is about finding answers to the questions that the play poses to actors and to directors. So it's a very different basis of working on the plays. We're about questions, finding answers to questions, rather than imposing an answer on the way the play needs to be produced. Does that help?
It helps me a lot, and explains why it's probably so much more effective to start when they're very young.
Yes, absolutely, because young children naturally have that very, very playful energy, and it does get difficult at high school. It does get difficult, particularly in around that teenage
that monosyllabic arena. Phase.
Exactly, it's a much more monosyllabic, exactly, and much less, much more inhibited physically.
Right.
So the more we can introduce it to, you know, 8, 9, 10-year-olds who don't have physical inhibitions in the same way that teenagers do, and have that very naturally playful approach to the text and the words and the language, and no fear, the better. We'll reap rewards later on.
Jackie O'Hanlon, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you. It's been my pleasure. Thank you.
Jackie O'Hanlon is the education director of the Royal Shakespeare Company. Jackie's been working with OSU and Central Ohio teachers and students since 2009 in a collaboration. If you want to stay with us, it's called Stand Up for Shakespeare, and we'll be talking about that more when we return. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher at 89.7 NPR News.
You're listening to 89.7 NPR News. At 1 o'clock, On Point begins the fight over the federal budget. On Point looks at the numbers and America's fiscal future. That discussion begins at 1, right here on 89.7.
Support for 89.7 comes from Affiliated, helping businesses reach their potential through Microsoft Dynamics CRM 2011. Affiliated will show it in action at the Columbus CRM 2011 launch event, February 22nd. Details at aresgrp.com.
41 degrees in downtown Columbus. There is a slight chance of rain today, otherwise cloudy skies and steady temperatures right around 40 degrees. Clouds tonight in a low of 22 degrees. Sunny skies for Tuesday and a high of 43. Partly cloudy Tuesday night and a low of 33 degrees. And looking ahead to Wednesday, mostly cloudy and the high is going to reach 53 degrees. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues on 89.7 NPR News.
We've just been listening to music composed by Stephen Beckett from an Ohio State University production of Shakespeare's Othello that began last weekend at the Roy Bowen Theater with performances through February 26th. Welcome back to All Sides with Dan Fisher. Joining us now is Allison Bomber. Allison is the senior text and voice coach of the Royal Shakespeare Company and has been working with OSU students and faculty and Central Ohio grade school teachers as part of the OSU Royal Shakespeare Company Stand Up for Shakespeare program. Since 2009, Allison is currently director-in-residence for the Ohio State University's Theater's 90-minute streamlined production of Shakespeare's Othello. Welcome to the show, Allison.
Thank you very much. It's lovely to be here.
Also with us is the actor playing Othello for all performances of the OSU production. Moapi Motibeti is a Master in Fine Arts graduate student in acting at Ohio State. He comes from South Africa. Welcome to the show, Moapi.
Thank you very much, Anne.
I should say welcome back. You were with us just about a year ago. Time flies when we were talking about, I wrote down on my script a few months ago, but it was about a year ago when we talked about the show Song for Coretta.
Yeah.
So welcome back.
Thank you. Good to be back.
To Allison, the full title of Shakespeare's play is Othello, the Moor of Venice. Tell us a little bit about this play and why you chose it for this production.
It's a very, very exciting, dynamic plot, I suppose, is one of the first reasons that I'm attracted to it as a play. It has some fantastic parts for women. That's another reason I'm attracted to it as a play. And I think it digs down into an investigation of personal relationships between people that are messy and ugly and therefore always interesting to explore and to play with. Othello is a Moor, as in he's from North Africa, and he is part of the higher echelons of Venetian society. He's a much respected general. He's a fantastic warrior who has done great service for the state, but nonetheless inhabits a position as an outsider within Venetian society. And he marries the daughter of a senator, very high up, against her father's wishes, against the pattern of society. And that's the trigger point for the beginning of then what happens. One of his subordinate officers, Iago, an extraordinary character whose motivations we never really get inside. And that's one of the joys of the play, is we never really know why he causes the destruction he causes. Iago starts to worm his way into Othello's brain and convince him that his wife is not the lovely, sweet, exciting human being she seems, but rather unfaithful and, as is frequently said in the play, a whore. This is all apparently complete invention on Iago's part, but he manages so cleverly and so deviously to get his way inside Othello's brain and pulls the wool over everybody's eyes in the play. It's not just Othello who thinks that Iago is honest, lovely, good man. Everybody in the play thinks that he's this great chap, but he runs around the whole time just feeding poison into everybody's ears. And you see the collapse of the marriage, you see the collapse of the military structure. And there's something very, very exciting about watching somebody manipulate human beings. So there are all sorts of games within the play that seem to me very, very exciting, very, very dynamic, and ripe for unpicking. It's also full of violence, lovely fights that are very dynamic and exciting.
Lovely fights.
Lovely fights. Well, yeah, I've found myself over the course of the last 4 weeks applying the word lovely to some really unpleasant things. So there's a fellow at one point really becomes quite physically abusive with Desdemona, his wife. And I found myself at those fight calls at the moments when it's got most unpleasant. I'll be sitting there going, yeah, that's great, that's lovely. And then I realise that what I'm saying that's great, that's lovely about is a man beating his wife, essentially. And, yeah, it slightly skews your perspective on what you're after.
Alison, you know, I want to hear, Wappy, we're going to ask you to, you know, we want to hear a brief speech from the play and then hear how you both worked on it. But Alison, before we move on, I just wondered, were you the kind of kid growing up that was totally into Shakespeare?
Yes, I was. And it's because I had teachers who were the opposite of the conventional. I had teachers who automatically did what Stand Up for Shakespeare is promoting in a wider way, of getting us to be speaking the text out loud, playing with words. And so I was one of the lucky ones. But I'm aware that that's a very rare experience of coming to language. But I think the thing about young children as well, as Jackie was saying, is that they're so connected to words that have rhythms and patterns and sound in. Because as you grow up as a small child, you play with nursery rhymes, you play with song, you enjoy words that make silly sounds. And one of the great joys for me of Shakespeare is how connected sound is to meaning. And there are so many words that he introduced to the language. For instance, the word gloomy. When you really listen to its qualities and its shapes, it gives you the sense of gloominess.
But he introduced that word?
Yeah, and there are literally hundreds. You can find lists of them on the internet, the words that we take for granted these days that were actually, as far as we can tell, used for the first time by Shakespeare or employed in a certain way by Shakespeare for the first time. And that sense of language being something that is not just about sheer meaning. It's language that has a visceral impact in the body. It's language that does something in your brain because it rhymes or it's got shapes and it's got sounds that are impacting on you. And I think that's the joy of speaking this language, is that you suddenly discover it's got dimensions that go much further than just pure meaning. And because small kids are much more likely to still be engaging in nursery rhymes, to enjoy rhyming language, exciting language, dynamic language, that they have a very immediate connection to that part of Shakespeare's language.
Moapi, are you ready to go?
Yeah.
Okay, so this is Moapi Matabedi, graduate student in acting at Ohio State University, speaking from Othello.
It is the cause. It is the cause. My soul, let me not name it to you, you chaste stars, it is the cause. Yet I'll not shed a blood, nor scar that white skin of earth and snow, and as smooth as monumental alabaster. Yet she must die, else she'll betray more men.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
That was a segment from Othello. Our guest today, Moapi Matabedi, he's a graduate student in acting at Ohio State University, comes via South Africa. And also with us is, Alison.
Alison Bomber.
Welcome back to the show. Alison Moapi, can you tell us how you prepare for something like that and how you work on something like that?
Well, for me personally, the preparation I had to do in terms of the production, because there's a multi-cast, we have two people playing the same role, and every night it changes. And a great part of my preparation was to try and come up with images, because what each Iago or each Desdemona brings every night is different. There's a dynamic, a different energy about them. And setting up images for myself in my head and developing relationships with those different members of the cast, so mm-hmm. that, you know, it's always fresh minted every single night when we play on that stage. And a huge part of my preparation also was the language factor. I'm not accustomed to this language. Shakespeare, to a certain extent, is very foreign to me.
This is the first time you've done Shakespeare?
Not really. I've done it, but not in this manner. We delve into the language. I remember one of the first things that Alison mentioned in her director's concept was that she will be focusing on the language. And for me, that was pretty daunting, because I'm like, oh boy, you know, I don't know much about this language. But what I appreciated in the rehearsal process was she just brought this wealth of knowledge in terms of how to break down the language, in terms of letting it sit within your body, letting it become your own. And there was theoretical preparation in terms of working on the scansion and figuring out the iambs and the prose and whatnot. But there's a huge difference from doing that in theory and doing it in practice, going up on stage and saying the words and letting them come out of your mouth. And the one thing that I became sensitized to during the rehearsal process was the rhythms of the language, the way in which Shakespeare wrote this language in a very specific manner. He wants you to say it in a very specific manner, and that you can find the space within the language, and also find there are moments that he wants you to really speak really fast, not fast, but be what Alison would say, become quick thinkers in a way, you know. So playing with those different rhythms and patterns was something really intriguing to me and fascinating, and really that's something that, you know, we delve deeply into in terms of preparing. And each rehearsal was just that, you know, going into the room, and it was like a lesson on its own. It's like, oh my gosh, I didn't know that you could do this, you know. And you realize how brilliant the man is to write something, and you realize within the language that he's giving you stage directions within the words that you speak. And that for me just blew my mind.
Alison, can you give us an example of the stage direction that Shakespeare gives in the words that he writes?
Well, specific ones. It was just really fascinating to me, because what I got them to do very early on was just stand up and start throwing these words at each other. And it suddenly becomes apparent as they're standing there that there'll be something that one person on stage needs to hear, but it needs to be hidden from somebody else who's on stage. So that immediately demands that how you shape that on the stage, that immediately becomes present in the actor's body. Oh, I suddenly need to be in this particular position so that I can be speaking openly to this person, but the other one over there doesn't get to hear that. What all these actors have been fantastic at doing is opening themselves up to this possibility of listening on so many levels, I think, is one of the things that Shakespeare demands of you. You've got to listen not only to the words, but you need to listen to the energy between people. And one of the excitements for me is putting this language under pressure. People come to Shakespeare thinking, oh, well, there are all these long speeches, and why do people speak for so long, and nobody does that, and that's not a real or true thing. But when you actually start to stand it up on its feet, you realise that it's not just somebody going on and on and on about something. Every little muscle, every little turning direction in the language is doing a different job on the people who are listening. And it might be that somebody's trying to interrupt you, and therefore you need to say something else to stop them, to put them in their place. It might be that you're trying to persuade somebody of something and you haven't yet persuaded them, which means you've got to find a bigger picture or a more exciting image or something else that is going to make them listen to you, make them change their minds. And none of these characters are speaking just for the hell of it. They are speaking to change the world around them. Every utterance is life or death, because it will make a difference to the world that is around you.
You know, you used a phrase that Jackie O'Hanlon did earlier, standing it up on its feet,
yeah,
as if it's a character unto itself.
Yes. Well, it sort of does. To me, it has shape and form, and it's a palpable presence in the room, this language. You know, one of the things that I think is also important about it is to dive in head first. If you sit around kind of worrying about what you might do when you stand up, then it then it becomes a bit alien and a bit difficult. If you just get in there and start speaking it, it starts to do something to you. It generates energy in the body, and thoughts start tossing you backwards and forwards because you suddenly realise that this is not just one stream of thought. This is one thought going in that direction. And then another thought comes in from somewhere else. And then a thought comes charging in from somewhere else. And so it becomes alive in the body.
Moby, Jackie O'Hanlon also mentioned just the wide reach of Shakespeare, and she mentioned South Africa. Is it something you grew up with, or is it something you grew up with avoiding, like so many, so many children around the world?
Grew up avoiding would be the correct way to put it. You know, it was taught in schools, and it is a huge part. You know, of it's fascinating to see how much he has impacted our society and the variations and many forms of the productions that have somewhat, you know, been assimilated within our culture. We've taken Shakespeare, and there's a version of Macbeth called Umabuta, and it's in Zulu, you know. And just to see how he has transcended, you know, those cultural barriers, you know, the universal appeal of his works is just phenomenal. And I personally, in classrooms, I was still a bit scared of it, you know, and our view of it in terms of how we got to study is the old way of you sit down at the table and they put the script with these convoluted words and you have to make sense of them, you know. And what I appreciate about this program is that, you know, we give children the opportunity to stand on their feet, you know, and really encompass the script, encompass these words within their bodies, you know. And the more you do that, the more you physicalize it, you know, the better you understand what this man was really trying to say with these particular words. So that is an opportunity that I wish I had, you know, in my classroom growing up.
So are you going out to classrooms and performing and working with kids?
And in the next quarter, we will be going out to the classrooms, working with the teachers and help facilitate some of the activities in terms of putting it up on its feet, you know, standing, making it physical for the children, you know.
Well, that must be super cool, though, to have, like, college students in their classroom too, right?
Yeah, I hope it will be a fun experience for them. I'm really looking forward to it.
Well, I want to say thank you to you now, Allison Bomber, Education Director for the Royal Shakespeare Company. You're going to stay with us for the next segment. And Maopi Motobedi, thanks again for joining us again.
Thank you very much.
And best wishes with Othello and the rest of your career at Ohio State.
Thank you very much, Anne.
We have to take a break right now. When we return, Amy McKibben from Hannah Aston Middle School in Reynoldsburg will be joining us, and as well as Allison Bomber. So stay with us. And if you want to talk with either of our guests, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. We'll be right back. This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News.
On Fresh Air, you'll hear the questions you wish you could have asked to people like Tom Kenny, the voice of SpongeBob SquarePants.
Did it help to hear what your voice sounded like on helium? Did you learn something about your voice you didn't know before?
Yeah, I learned that I don't really need the helium.
Because it's pretty easy to flick that switch and go right up there.
The most interesting people in show business on Fresh Air.
And Fresh Air begins in 20 minutes. On today's edition of the program, Matthew Alexander is a former U.S. military interrogator in Iraq who refused to participate in the harsh techniques. On Fresh Air, meet Alexander and discuss his new book, Kill or Capture, How a Special Operations Task Force Took Down a Notorious Al-Qaeda Terrorist. That is on Fresh Air at noon, right here on 89.7 NPR News.
Support for 89.7 NPR News comes from Capital University Law School, helping to prepare tomorrow's leaders for success in the legal community. More details on becoming a paralegal, legal nurse consultant, or life care planner at law.capital.edu.
I'm midday host Amy Jurevich, and the 89.7 NPR News Winter Membership Drive was a great success, thanks to your generous contributions. If you missed the chance to give, you can still do so at WOSU.org. Thank you for investing in the quality programming on 89.7 NPR News. And it's 41 degrees currently, cloudy skies today, more clouds tonight, and a low of 22. All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. As we've heard, Stand Up for Shakespeare America began in 2009 in Central Ohio with a group of grade school teachers traveling to Stratford-upon-Avon to study with the Royal Shakespeare Company and continuing their training at Ohio State University with coaching by visiting actors and educators from the Royal Shakespeare Company and the OSU Theater Department. Allison Bomber is one of the Royal Shakespeare Company's acting coaches who has been training Central Ohio teachers. Again, Allison, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
And joining us now, Amy McKibben. She teaches at Hannah Ashton Middle School in Reynoldsburg. She was among the first group of teachers to go to Stratford in 2009 with the Stand Up for Shakespeare America program. Amy, welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
What was it like to go to England to work with the Royal Shakespeare Company as an elementary school teacher, well, your middle school teacher, but still it's probably not something that you had in your to-do list necessarily?
Well, it was a wonderful opportunity, and it was not like anything I would have expected. You know, often you hear you're going on a professional development trip and you're not quite sure what you're going to get out of it. But from the very minute we walked in and they had us standing up, acting out parts of A Winter's Tale, it was unbelievably inspiring and really very life-changing, at least it was for me.
Is theater your background? Is that what you teach?
No, I teach language arts. I teach 5th and 6th grade. It's a multi-age classroom, language arts. But I do happen to have a theater background as well. I have a bachelor's in acting. So I was certainly interested as soon as I heard about it. But there were many teachers from a variety of content areas and a variety of backgrounds that all participated in that training.
Let's hear from some of the kids. We have a cut from the kids talking about the experience of learning about this.
When we did the games and stuff, I paid more attention than I would if we're just sitting there writing.
I could probably tell the whole story to you now, since we did all that stuff. But if you made me read it, I probably wouldn't be able to.
So what are they talking about, the games and stuff?
Oh, well, we have a variety of techniques that are taken from the RSC rehearsal processes that we infuse into our classrooms, which has made the students it's kind of harnessed their natural energy. And, you know, we definitely make the effort to stand it up immediately. We do not spend much time in my classroom sitting and reading. We are often standing and reading. And sometimes I think they don't realize how much reading they're actually doing in the course of a class period because we're so active with it that they don't realize that they're making inferences and they're talking about what motivates characters and analyzing an author's techniques for how characters are created. And they're doing all of these very high-level analytical literary techniques as 5th and 6th graders actively on their feet so they feel like they're playing.
You know, so that's what they're talking about. They're talking about rehearsing.
Yes.
Is the game that they're suggesting. A lot of the themes, you know, spousal abuse, you know, violence, you know, it goes on and on with Shakespeare. He covers pretty much every kind of theme you could in his work. But a lot of them we might, in a knee-jerk reaction, think of as too adult for middle schoolers. How do you interpret things with them? And or maybe after Jersey Shore, nothing really matters anymore. I don't know. Well, I've never seen it, but I've heard.
You know, I focus on what I think is appropriate and interesting for them because Shakespeare runs such a gamut that it's, you know, it's not necessary all the time to focus on what we as adults might find the most interesting. You know, I think that students are very much interested in real life. They're interested in solving problems. And when we look at a problem that's brought up by the text, we can really approach it in a way that is that's meaningful for them, and they can look through a character's lens at these very real issues that they are going to be faced with at some point in their lives. But there's like a safety net where we're looking at it as a fictional story. Those feelings could be real, but it is still – there's a protection there. So, you know, I do try to tailor what we're looking at to the age group, but we still look at the entire play. For example, if I'm teaching Othello, there are very real issues with middle school children about the idea of reputation and the idea of the difference between what someone appears to be and what someone really is. So that looking at it through that lens gives them an understanding of that dimension in a way that there aren't many other texts that would. Because the complexity of the Shakespeare text really lends itself to looking through various lenses at various problems and solving them in ways that are very, very comprehensible to children that are younger.
Alison Bomber, when you set out to do this project, you know, back 2008, 2009, was there a temptation to – I know that we talked about the streamlined version of Othello and we didn't really get to what you meant by that or what is meant by that. But is there a temptation to, for lack of a better phrase, dumb down Shakespeare?
I think that there might be thought to be that temptation, but I think it's absolutely unnecessary. And the reason for the streamlining, I guess, is more about a time constraint than anything else. I think it's very demanding for young children to be expected to sit for 2.5 to 3 hours to watch a show. But if you can give them, for instance, our show, which is essentially aimed more at a sort of high school range, Othello is 90 minutes. The young person's Midsummer Night's Dream, which has been produced by OSU, which is now going out into schools, is very much for elementary level, and that's cut down to an hour. There's also the RSC's Young Person's Shakespeare Hamlet will be in Ohio in June. That's also down to an hour. And that's more about making sure that you're covering the attention span. Certainly in Othello, as I was cutting it, I wasn't sitting there thinking, oh, is this appropriate for a 12-year-old? Is this not? What I was looking for was is this telling a clear, exciting story that people will be able to engage with? And I think particularly when you've got we're doing 5 school matinees where the audience will be entirely high school students, and they are being given some preparation before they come, and they'll be given space afterwards to talk about the show. So that it's not that they're being launched into these things without thinking. But I also think that I think that Amy's absolutely right, that having this as a fictional place enables kids to grapple with things which are already questions for them. There's no question. The Hamlet is geared at elementary school, and the notion of this young man who's having to deal with the death of his father and then the rapid remarriage of his mother, as Hamlet has to, is something that the children who've worked on the show and then come to see the show are really keen to unpack and explore and be able to talk about, but they're able to talk about it through this safe lens of a character in a show rather than it being their own lives, even though some of them may already, of course, be having to deal with those problems and those emotional difficulties.
Amy, when you're talking with them and you're teaching the play and talking and you've set it up on its feet, are you using examples from the real life situations that kids are dealing with today to teach those lessons that are in the story?
Well, it depends. It's very much student directed, which is one of the things that drove me or most interested me about this type of work. For example, perhaps when we were working on Macbeth, something did come up where we were talking about the war at the beginning, and several students brought up on their own, well, I have soldiers in my family. I have people who are in Iraq. And of course, if it comes up organically like that in class, then certainly that becomes part of our discussion. But it's not I generally try to look at it as what is the problem in this play, and how are we going to how are we going to grapple with those problems that are in the play?
614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. And Charlotte, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. You mentioned, or your guest mentioned, that there were classes going on in several other countries. One is only about 400 miles from here. It's Justin Bieber's hometown of Stratford on the Avon River. And for over 20 years, there's been an elementary school teacher, Lois Burdett, who at Hamlet Elementary has been teaching about William Shakespeare to second and third graders. And I have a book. That town has three wonderful theaters, and Christopher Plummer has appeared there, several of the Shakespeare plays, Paul Gross, and I can't remember several others. But anyway, I have a book that's been illustrated by these second and third graders along the way. And they seem to have really gotten the characters under their skin. The lady approached the kids first by asking, who is William Shakespeare? And she got all kinds of funny answers. But anyway, one of them said, well, is it the president of Canada? And no, it's not my big brother. I don't even have a big brother. But anyway, I just wanted you to know that there is another place really close, and bus trips do go up there for seeing the plays and mm-hmm. so on. So that's my comment.
Well, great. Thanks, Charlotte.
You're welcome. Bye.
Bye.
I think that's absolutely right. And as I was saying earlier, you know, I was lucky in my teachers. And of course, there are many honourable exceptions to the rule, people who are already teaching Shakespeare in a dynamic and exciting way. But I think very often for a large number of teachers, for the teachers themselves, Shakespeare is a fearful thing. And therefore, of course, it's difficult to know how to communicate it. And, I think what the RSC is trying to offer is support to those teachers who are struggling with how to make this thing, which certainly in the UK is part of the enforced curriculum. You have to at some point study Shakespeare.
Oh.
And to provide methods for the teachers who are wary of it also to do it. You know, there's obviously people who maybe come to teaching with an acting background may have an advantage in teaching Shakespeare. But for those who are coming to it blank and looking for ways to engage kids with it, that's who the program Stand Up for Shakespeare are aiming to get to.
We have an email from Charlotte, a different Charlotte. Many years ago, our English teachers loaded us into a bus and took us to the MacArthur Theater at Princeton University. There was one particular college student in that production, and he had the greatest frog ribbit I've ever heard. They used it in the garden scene. I think kids can relate to that far earlier than they have any comprehension of tragedy or the power of the bard's poetry. Do you start with comedies for the younger kids?
I think that you start with anything that I didn't start with a comedy. I started with a romance.
Complex to understand.
They can
not necessarily simpler. Difficult.
Quite fascinating. I just was teaching Midsummer Night's Dream because the production is coming to my school actually this week. And really, there's so much depth in it that I really felt that I could have spent 6 months on it and not gotten through all of the many, many layers that are in there. I've taught The Tempest. I've taught King Lear. I've taught bits and pieces of Othello. I've taught Midsummer Night's Dream. And I am planning to delve into Hamlet next. So not necessarily. I think the level of complexity is fairly steady, whether it's a comedy or a tragedy. And they truly enjoy the language. You know, they carry around with them bits and pieces of the language, both things that they've memorized and things they actually physically carry with them in their binders and their folders that I find at random times. So,
and for me, that's one of the absolute key things about what getting ownership of Shakespeare can do for children. Jackie talked about the statistics of improving their own writing and their own composition. But that sense that children start to understand that language is something that if they can get inside themselves, they can use to shape their world as well. And the ability to speak, the ability to articulate your problems, your needs, your requirements in the world is going to get you a long way. And so giving children access to complex language to give them the chance to think larger thoughts, I think is a life skill. It's not just about Shakespeare.
There is a level of confidence that I've seen amongst my students since I started this last year.
I was going to ask if there are any changes.
Oh, my. Mm-hmm. The confidence level, I would say, for every student has risen just exponentially. They believe that they can read and write anything. And that is, I think very much a testament to the way we have worked with this text, with this language, the way we've played with it, the fact that they can understand things that their high school siblings are working on, and they understand it at a very deep and very internal level. So, yes, I think the confidence level has been one of the main factors that I can point to and say, wow, that has made a difference in the lives of those children.
Allison Bomber, any differences in how you teach American teachers versus teachers in the UK? Is it all the same curriculum?
I really don't think there are. I think this came up. We had a symposium over the weekend on Othello, and somebody was saying, is there any difference working with these American actors than the British actors you work with at home? And for me, I absolutely don't think I have them labelled in those boxes. They're each groups of individuals, and the important thing is to encounter those individuals and speak as directly as you can to them. And human beings, as nobody knew better than Shakespeare, are infinite in their uniqueness. And so one group of people can't be called you are Americans, and another group of people you are British. You are a group of individuals, and it's great to meet you, and let's work together and play together. You are another group of individuals, let's work together and play together. I can't put them in those boxes and go, you behave like this and you behave like this. No, individuals behave as they behave.
Amy McKibben, before you went on that trip to Stratford-on-Avon, how much experience did you have with Shakespeare yourself?
As a teacher?
At all.
My experience was mostly from my acting background. And of course, I had the teachers when I was in school that we sat and we read Shakespeare. We sat and we read sonnets, and we sat and we read Romeo and Juliet, and we sat and we read I don't know, something else when I was my senior year. Don't remember. But
another Shakespeare play.
Yeah, some other Shakespeare play. And I did enjoy the language. I enjoyed the sound of it. I was always a person who enjoyed language. But I wasn't really engaged with it or particularly understanding it on a very deep level. So that, for me, when I went to Stratford, it was a real deepening for me of my my realization that the reason this is good to teach, it is, for one thing, it is the language. But there's also that complexity of human nature that we just can't find everywhere. And I found that very interesting because that was opened up to me in Stratford in a way that it had never been before.
What can you tell us about what's coming up? We just have about a minute left, Allison, this year. Any more productions?
In the rest of the program? Well, as I say, currently Midsummer Night's Dream is making its way around elementary schools in Columbus. The Royal Shakespeare Company are bringing their current ensemble company, 2.5 years' worth of work, will come to New York in June. There's a six-week residency at the Armory with a gala performance that is OSU-sponsored.
And Amy looks like she gets to go.
Yeah. Okay. I think she does. there's 6 weeks of work in New York at the Armory. And, yes, the Hamlet, the young person Shakespeare's Hamlet, will be in Columbus, Ohio, in June as well.
All righty. Well, I want to thank you, Allison Bomber, Senior Text and Voice Coach of the Royal Shakespeare Company. Thanks for joining us today.
It's been an absolute pleasure.
And also Amy McKibben at Hannah Ashton Middle School in Reynoldsburg. Thanks for joining us, Amy.
Thank you.
And thank you for joining us on the show. That's all the time we have. This is All Sides, and this is WOSU 89.7, WOSU HD1, and WOSU 820 Columbus, and streaming online at WOSU.org, 89.7 NPR News, a service of WOSU Public Media.
Support for WOSU comes from the McCoy Center for the Arts. The 2011 lecture series continues with Gene Edward Smith speaking about how FDR helped shape the United States in the 20th century. Tuesday the 15th at 7 p.m. Details at McCoyCenter.org.